Welcome to Get a Grip with Shane Bacon, a production of iHeartRadio. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Get a Grip podcast. Hope you guys enjoyed last week's convo with Shad Tootin. One of my favorite of the year. I've had a lot of people reach out, not just about the episode, but just about how professional Shad has been about this whole thing. Would have been very easy not to be. So if you missed that episode, go back and listen to it. Shad Tootin, if you don't know the story, was the guy that had a penalty cost him basically his PGA Tour card for 2024 in the final round of the Korn Ferry Tour Championship. And he came on and discussed the whole scenario and the whole situation and all that. So a lot of fun last week. Got another great one for you this week. Speaking of tours that aren't the very top tier, but right below it, Kate Smith joined, who had a great season on the Epson Tour. And we discussed the Epson Tour and her year and what flipped from year one to year two. And then, of course, Kate and I work together. We run and own Grunt Under Repair Design. And so we talked about juggling two jobs at once and doing design and also trying to play professional golf. So great convo with Kate, one of my favorite people in all the world, not just in golf, but just a great human being. And if you're interested in what we're doing in terms of the design work, we have a website. It's GURDesigns.com, GURDesigns.com. And you can check out the collaborations we've worked on, some of the gallery of work, and just what we do and how we started, some of the logos we've worked on over the years. And I have promised a GUR store coming very soon. It is coming very, very soon. I actually just got a box, and it's at the front door of my house right now. I got an alert on my phone as I was recording this that the tees that we created with our friends at Western Birch just got here. So we're going to sell the tees and bag. And they're smiley, positive tees. That's all I'll tell you. And we've got stickers, and we'll have some prints and all that. That'll be coming soon on the website, trying to get that up before the holidays. But GURDesigns.com, check out what we're doing. And let's get to the conversation, because I think listening to someone on the women's side of golf that plays on, I guess we can call it a developmental tour, even though I think it's bigger than that, on the Epson Tour, about her year and all that she's gone through and how she's switched her game to be as competitive as she's been in 2023. Kate Smith is with us. If you don't know Kate, you probably haven't followed my social media much over the last couple of years. Kate, you just finished up your second season on the Epson Tour, and you had an excellent year. I mean, you finished 19th on the money list. This was after, you know, I mean, everybody's rookie year. I mean, some people just kind of cruise through and some kind of get their footing. What was the big difference for you year one to year two? Because the success has obviously been pretty abundant for you.
Yeah, it was a huge difference between my first and second year. I think a lot of things go into it, but just learning how to travel. And, you know, I think going from college to professional golf, you feel like you need to change everything, or that's how I felt, you know, like, I have to relearn how to practice. Like, I have to get so much better, when really it's like a game of inches, and you don't have to change everything. So it felt a little bit better playing like my kind of golf this year and seeing it pay off in ways I expected and also didn't expect.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about travel, and for people that are listening to this podcast that maybe don't know much about the Epson Tour or don't dive deep into it, I mean, the Epson's basically the Korn Ferry Tour on the women's side of golf. And it's basically that kind of that step below the LPGA Tour. And you can play yourself onto the LPGA Tour. As I said, you finished 19th on the money list. Top 10 gets their LPGA Tour cards. So you had a great season. I think you had four top 10s. You had a second place finish. It was really consistent. You made your last 10 cuts, and you had a great finish in the last event. So now it's about gearing up for Q School, because they give out cards there as well. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah. So I missed the 10 automatic cards, but there's about 20-ish cards that are given out at our final stage, which is called Q Series, which has historically been one of the most like grueling, you know, sports events that, you know, doesn't get a lot of coverage, but it's a grind. So I'm just trying to gear up for that and, you know, stick with the process. But it's pretty exciting to have another chance at an LPGA card, and a really good chance.
Yeah, Kate, we've been chatting throughout the year. I mean, obviously, you know, you played well and you finished top 10, or you have a top five. Did you feel like you had an opportunity to hop in the top 10 late in the season? Would you feel like you had to do over the course of the last four, five, six events?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think I bounced between like 13 and 25 all year, which kind of means that a win at any point would have put me in the top 10. And, you know, I, like you said, I made the last 10 cuts. I mean, you kind of know when you can win, and then you know when, you know, maybe a top 20 is like a good week. So I felt like my game was trending the last few weeks. So I was really trying to win, but I mean, it's a lot more complicated than that. So I felt like the last week tour championship, I definitely could have happened. I had a slow second round, shot even, but it was just nice to have the chance. And of course I would have liked to have a card, but for me, like I still need the experience. And so just being within reach was just a great opportunity.
You were talking about learning how to travel. So can you lay out for us, I was going to ask you this later in the podcast, but can you lay out for us what a travel week is like on the Epson Tour? I mean, are you booking everything? Are you flying? Are you driving? Are you staying with people? Do they have host families that'll have you at certain events? How are you finding caddies? Are you traveling with the same caddy throughout the year? What's Epson? Give us kind of a week in the life of an Epson Tour player.
Yeah. So typically we travel in bunches, like 3 to 4 weeks at a time. Which towards the end, I was kind of going home on maybe a Monday. So I'd finish on a Sunday, go home.
To Galveston, to Texas.
Galveston, yep. Texas, yeah. And then I would fly out maybe Tuesday morning, get there, play 9 holes, pro-am Wednesday, maybe take Thursday off. And then a lot of our tournaments are Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So, and then you do that about 5 weeks in a row. I don't always go home, but towards the end, it was just nice. We had a 5 week stretch and a lot of girls, they did the whole 5 weeks in a row, and then they did another week. They stayed in Florida and then they went to Q school. So we're talking like sometimes 7, 8 weeks out of the same suitcase, which it's all about saving money. So you have to do it. I mean, you can't just, you know, go home all the time. So it's pretty crazy lifestyle.
Is it hotels? Is it host families? Kind of how where do you stay when you're on the road?
I'd say, you know, 80% of us are doing host families. So these are like members of the club or, you know, local business people that open their homes, which is great. I do hotels every once in a while. I call it kind of like my GUR week. I'm like, okay, I can pay for a hotel and I'll get more work done and I won't, you know, be petting their dogs or babysitting their kids or whatever, you know, the host families have. So
I'm not going to have you name names or name events, but what's the percentage of great host families versus the percentage of you get to a host family's house and you're like, man, I should have gone with hotel this week. Is it like 80-20 good?
It's usually 80-20 good. Yeah, it's mostly good. I've heard some horror stories, but it's amazing what these people do for us in a week. I mean, I've heard people gotten, you know, taken to a mall to go shopping, you know, or they give you
like
some money on, yeah, they give you some money on the way out and they're like, have a good week next week. You know, that they know that I think when they see us in person and what we do on a daily basis, they're like, wow, these girls are really roughing it. So
mindset after year one, did you feel like I can improve? Did you feel like I belong out here? Was it intimidating after you finished your first season on the Epson Tour? And then when did the mentality switch from, I didn't have a great year, I didn't maybe play the way I wanted, but you also kind of know it's your rookie year versus coming into year two? I feel like you got off to such a great start out of the gate. What was that transition change? When was it, when did it happen? And when do you feel like you went, okay, I can do this for a living?
Yeah, I would say after my rookie year, those like 4 months from November to February were probably like the worst 4 months of my golf career. I mean, just searching, you know, and I think as a golfer, like there's some fun in that, but when it's your job, the searching is like really scary.
Yeah.
After my rookie year, I went to Q school, had a pretty good chance to like go to Q series. And I started my final round double, double, double in stage two. And so that's after my rookie year. You're just wondering like, why, like, is it my process? Like, is it, you know, do I need a new swing coach? Need a new psychologist? I mean, you're throwing the book out, you know? So I had to really like kind of find what worked and try to get ready for the second year. And I honestly didn't know how the second year would go. I mean, I definitely wanted to give it like a try for 3 years, but like you said, when does it turn from like giving it a try to this is what I should be doing? And I think in Phoenix, I got off to a great start, second event of the year. And I think I got ninth there in a really big field. A lot of the early events for us, a lot of LPGA girls are in. And that was like a real eye opener. Like, this is what I should be doing. And like, let's have a good year and kind of give it 100%. You know, you always are giving it 100%, but there's different levels of it, of like, hey, we're giving it everything and we're not going to have that like voice in the back of our head, like, oh, maybe we should be doing something different, or maybe I'm not good enough.
I feel like for pro golfers, I mean, I dealt with this, you know, a long time ago, is there are like field fillers, right? There's players that are there and they make up the numbers and they're likely not going to contend or win. And then there are players there that show up and they feel like, I've got a chance to win. My game is good enough. I feel like this year for you, it felt like you went kind of from field filler to contender. And I mean, that goes beyond just Epson Tour stuff. I mean, you almost qualify for the U.S. Women's Open at Pebble. I mean, I think you get in a playoff. Is that right, at the qualifier?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, I see on your face that still kind of hits you in the heart. But, you know, like, I mean, that again, you go to these qualifiers and there's not a lot of spots out there, and you give yourself an opportunity to qualify for a U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. It just felt like every event you were playing in, you had an opportunity to do something, whether it be like, it wasn't about making the cut. It was like, I can finish top 20. I can finish top 10. I can get in the top five. You had a couple of events. I know that you were in contention late in that final round. I mean, every one of those things builds confidence, right? And every time you're in those situations, you feel like, all right, I took another step towards what I'm trying to accomplish.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, I think, you know, my first year making a cut was great. And it is great. I mean, making a cut, making a paycheck, awesome. Yep. But then as you keep going, you realize that, like, if that's the goal, then we're probably not going to be doing this very long. So, you know, you need those positions where you're competitive, and you're competitive with really great golfers. And I think that's also hard, because you're thinking like, oh my gosh, like, look who's in this field. And you're like, no, you got to step out of it. Like, you have to be the best this week. Like, if you're, you know, stargazing at people around you, like, you're probably not in the best position to beat them right now. So,
wow, look who's over there. That person looks really good. I yeah. asked you about caddies. You have infamously caddied for yourself at times. What was this year like? Did you loop? Did you carry your own bag at any point during the year? How do you find caddies kind of on the road? Are they local? Do you pay them? Are they buddies that fly in? Like, what's the, I mean, again, this is the Epson Tour. I mean, for people that don't realize this, this is literally the Korn Ferry Tour equivalent. And you are in potentially searching for loopers week to week.
Yeah, caddies on the Epson Tour are pretty hilarious. I mean, between, you know, the girls doing themselves, I did it. I carried my own bag 6 weeks in a row last year. And, you know, I like it. It was good. But you realize, I think this year I was like, wow, playing a lot more weekends. Like, you get tired faster when you don't.
I don't want to carry this bag.
Yeah, so I have a lot of like family friends. I got like a few guys that help. One person I grew up with, he's on the road a lot with me. And so that's pretty fun. We can kind of do it cheap. And it's been good to have a caddy. Honestly, this year was kind of like, it was like playing blackjack. Like, I kept winning, or like, I kept, you know, covering my expenses. So I was like, great, I can put more money on a caddy next week. So sadly, it's kind of how it is. I mean, I couldn't commit to a caddy for a full year. That's just an expense I can't afford. But when you keep playing well,
does anybody on Epson Tour have a caddy for the full season?
I'd say it's like maybe three or four girls that are hired caddies. You know, maybe their mom does it the whole year, but there's really not a lot of full-time caddies out there.
So you and I met, interesting enough, on Twitter. I mean, which is, you know, how people meet in this world. I mean, you're 24. Are you 24 now, Kate? Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. So you're 24. You and I connected on Twitter through the podcast, through Get a Grip, right? Is that kind of how it initially started?
Oh yeah. No, I huge golf nerd. I was listening to all different podcasts kind of right out of college. And, yours was one of my favorite. And I was like, I felt like I was learning like so much about golf. And
this was when Max was involved. This was when Max and I were kind of co-hosting it every week. And I know he was kind of influential in a strange way in your process, and you almost improving mentally, right?
Yeah. I mean, I just felt like, I mean, his career was definitely different than mine, but just trying, you know, he was trying to figure out how to win at a higher level. And I was trying to find my first win in college. And I think we won kind of similar weeks. So I reached out to you guys and was like, we did it. You know, you guys didn't know I was trying to win, but I was like, we did it, team, you know? So it was good. It was fun. I just love, you know, like any type of high level golfer, like hearing their process, even if you can't relate to it, it's really interesting.
And you got into graphic design at what point in your life? When did you get into kind of the design space?
Yeah, I majored in it in college. I mean, my mom was a art major. I grew up, you know, being artistic, doing a lot of different mediums, and that seemed like a natural path in college. It was horrible major to do golf with, but it was fun.
And then the Twitter thing is kind of how I felt like I first was introduced to you, was you posting these logos on Twitter. What was the thing? Was it Rita's, what'd you call it?
Logos under repair.
Logos under repair. That's right. So tell people what you were doing, because I thought it was so interesting, especially now with what we're doing.
Every course I competed on, I would redo their logo and I would tweet it out the night before we played.
And I remember you, I think it was, what's the one in Orlando, Orange County or whatever? Was that what it is?
Yeah, that was my first one because they have a terrible logo, Orange County National.
And the one you did was awesome. It was like a slice of orange, I feel like, or something like that, right?
Yeah, it was simple, you know, but instead of, they have this like huge circle. I don't know. It's pretty bad, but I was like, we're doing it. Like that was the first one. And then there was sometimes I was like, I don't know why I did this. I'd be up like 11 a.m. before, you know, like this is horrible. I have no ideas. I got to tee off tomorrow, but it was fun.
Yeah. So you and I team up a couple of years ago to start Ground Under Repair, which is our logo design business. And we do course logos and Buddy's Trip logos. We've done some non-golf company logos. We've worked with some big brands in the game. We've worked with some small brands in the game, but it's been a lot of fun. And so you're on the road trying to play pro golf, Kate. And at the same time, you've got this business and you're the main designer and you're the person that's really where the designs land. Even if you're not doing the design, you're keeping an eye on some of our designers that are doing those. So how is that process on the road with playing, practicing, thinking about the game, thinking about the tournament, and also knowing you've got business on the back end to take care of, or you've got designs you need to knock out, or you got a deadline coming up? How has that process worked over the last year and a half for you?
Yeah, well, first off, the business has been awesome. I mean, we've had so much fun and a weirdly great team that we have, you know, like kind of scrounged it together. So it's been great. But it is stressful at times, you know, because it's, which has been a reflection of our success of our business. And we have clients that have no idea who you are, have no idea that we're golfing, and they just need a logo right now. And I'm like, well, I compete tomorrow, you know, I can't really do this right now. But so trying to keep the quality up and kind of like not play the card of like, hey, I'm a professional golfer, I can't do this logo. But it's been great. I mean, the clients we've had have been amazing. And I think it's fun. It exercises a totally different part of my brain than I use on the golf course. And I think, you know, the whole self-worth piece, it's nice when like you can have a bad round and still, you know, find success in something else that evening.
Are you finding hours during tournament weeks? Because two things I've tried to do when I'm emailing clients and I know you have a tournament that week, it's just mentioning it in an email, right? Like, oh, Kate's playing in X, Y, and Z, just so they know. If they don't know who you are, they don't know you're playing professional golf, at least to give them an idea of what's going on. But I always will tell you this on the phone, like golf comes first for you, because obviously, I mean, that's the path you're trying to go down and the LPGA is the end goal for you. So how have you juggled the balls? Like, how have you gone about making sure you're not overwhelming yourself with design clients and stressing about that, while you're obviously focused on tournament weeks and trying to play good golf?
Yeah, you've been super helpful, not swamping me during tournaments. But I think last year, my rookie year, I would send emails right away. I mean, like before I tee off, like after I tee off, I'd be in between rounds drawing, you know, I was like, okay, morning tee time, I can design in the afternoon. And this year, I kind of had to set a boundary and say, okay, like once the tournament starts, like you check it on Monday.
I'm off. Yep.
Yeah. Which has been good.
Like, do you mute emails? What do you do to kind of keep, cause it's so easy to look at it, Kate, you know, like you can look at your phone or you can look at your email, or I could be texting you in theory.
Yeah.
How do you kind of just avoid it from your peripheral, so it's not on the brain?
I don't have the Gmail app on my phone, but I look it up like on HTML, like Safari, when I need to check in.
Wow. Wow. Look at you. Nice. There you go. Super old school.
So it takes longer, which is probably not a time saver, but so yeah, and then, you know, Mondays when I get home, I try to hit the designing hard. And it, I mean, we have bigger projects, which is exciting, but they take a lot more energy, and I want to make sure I'm like sitting and have, you know, it's kind of like a good practice session. Like you kind of need that runway of like 4 or 5 hours in case it gets to that point. So definitely carving out those times can be tough, but it's awesome.
What is the goal for next year? I mean, as you're kind of looking at Q series, and you're looking at next year, obviously getting an LPGA card is number one, but what is the goal as you go from year one to year two? Massive improvement. Now you're going year two to year three. What do you kind of, do you write down goals? Do you write down plans? Do you have like things you want to improve on? You want to hit it longer? You want to be better around the greens? Like, how do you go about preparing for year three as you're getting closer and closer to kind of concluding year two?
Yeah, usually huge into goal setting. I usually do like 1 year and 5 year goals. It's a little bit harder in professional golf just because it's so fluid. Best case scenario is I get an LPGA card. I'm assuming I'll probably kind of be in the limbo of doing a lot of Mondays, doing some Epson, which I've watched some of my peers do. It's a really, you know, tough lifestyle. People do it on the men's side when you're really playing on like two different tours at the same time. So I'm assuming that might come into play next year. I know I need to get better at putting, and I would just like to be like a better wedge player. I mean, I just think you can just improve so much on your wedges. And I've seen a lot of improvement in that side of my game. So, you know, it's nice. I can kind of keep grinding away at it, but historically ball striking has been pretty good. And just trying to keep, I think from year one, I was trying to be really perfect with my swing, like really have one shot shape. And that's never really something I've ever done. So year two, I kind of more embraced like really being creative and not like holding myself back on that side of things. So those are kind of my keys going into next year, trying to get better.
Do the other players on the Epson Tour know you have this logo business? Like, do they know what you're doing?
I would say not
okay.
really.
Okay.
The first year I was really trying to be like, this is what I'm doing. And then I'm like, you know, we're doing fine. Like, I don't need to peddle my business all the time. So it's fun. Some of the girls are really, really into it. They love it. I give them hats or whatever, and they wear them while they're competing. It's great.
Do other players on the Epson Tour have other jobs? Because I mean, if you're not, I mean, I was looking at the money list. I mean, outside of kind of Gabby Ruffles, I mean, you're not making six figures on the Epson Tour. I mean, do most players have secondary jobs in the off season or something to make money?
Yeah, I'd say a lot of girls work in pro shops, or substitute teach is a really common thing. Some people are realtors. I mean, the money is so much better than it was. Like, I'm very grateful for our sponsors, but it definitely is not, it's not an income. You know, if you don't have two incomes at home with a partner, it's or if you're living at your parents, I mean, it's hard. Everybody's struggling to get by.
Your parents were both in the golf industry. What was that like growing up? When did you kind of get the bug? Like, when did you start to get interested in golf? Do you even remember when that was?
Yeah, I'd say probably 9 or 10. My dad was a club pro, and my brother was a great golfer. My mom is great too. She's great with the juniors teaching. I remember bribery was a big key
nice.
Growing up.
Kate, I need this information because Henry right now, who is four, cares absolutely zilch about golf. So it's nice to hear.
No.
It's nice to hear 9 was the time when you got into it.
No, it took me a while. I mean, it was boring as a kid. Like, I love basketball and, you know, doing art, but I just remember, you know, my dad say, okay, like $20 if you break 80, like, you know, $5 if you know, I remember that was very motivating as a kid. And so score became really fun for me when I was younger, because I was just always trying to, you know, like break 90, break 85, break 80. And I think that's like the most fun part of golf is when you're kind of like running through all those stages.
I was emailing with your dad asking him a couple of questions about your upbringing. And he said, ask her how enjoyable it was to go to the maintenance barn in 30 below temps, hitting balls into a bed mattress. Do you remember that lifestyle that was a part of what you were doing?
That was, hard to forget that. No, he hung up tarps in front of the mowers, and then there was a mattress, and there was a space heater in front of the AstroTurf mat on the gravel. And I would like shuffle out in my snow boots, and I'd change my sneakers when I got in the maintenance barn. It was, character building times for sure.
I mean, you have to just love the game living in certain areas of the country. I mean, I just find it so fascinating, like moving to the Northeast. And listen, the Northeast is not Minnesota. It's not Nebraska. Like, it's not Wyoming. It's not these places where, like I said, it's 30 to below. I mean, you can get around winters here. You can't get around the winters where you grow up. I mean, there's not really golf for 4, 5, 6 months. So you catch the bug. Were you itching to get the spring so you could play more golf? I mean, how was it like as a kid living in a place that was freezing cold half of the year, trying to improve and trying to get better and trying to play golf?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't know any different. And I think definitely, living in the North, it becomes more of like a ritual or like a spiritual thing playing golf, because you're like waiting. And then when the snow's melting, you're like getting excited. And the courses are horrible when they open, but you don't care. So you learn to play.
Like 2 months they're in bad shape, you know? I mean, it's not like it's a week they're in bad shape, right?
No, they're still like punched from last fall, yep. Or there's snow mold on them, but you don't care. So it's just such a fun way to like learn to play golf. And, but yeah, the winters are long. I mean, I remember high school season was always in the spring, and we would start like sometimes in March, but most of the time we'd start in May, and then state would be in, end of June. So we had a 2 month season for high school golf. It was a sprint.
Can you tell me what Kate's Club is or was?
Sure. Yes. It's because I had no friends. That's what my mom says. She said, we had to start a girls only clinic because Kate had no friends to play golf.
You had no golfing friends. I think you had friends. You just didn't have any golfing friends.
So yeah, they were trying to get more girls to play. So Mondays was a girls only clinic. And it's really cool because when we started, I remember it was like 8 girls. And then towards the end, when I was coming back from college to teach it, it was like our busiest camp. It was like 65 girls every week. So it's really cool that, more girls in our town got into golf, and a lot of successful golfers, coming out of it was really cool.
Is it weird being a role model? I mean, considering you're 24 and you've played pro golf for a couple of years. I mean, you own a business, you're playing pro golf. Now you're engaged, you're prepping for a wedding. Like, you've got a lot of stuff going on. You're very mature for your age. When I looked up your age today to make sure it was right, I was shocked myself that you're only 24 because of all the stuff you're able to do. Is it wild kind of seeing where you're at this point early in your life?
Yeah, it's really surreal. I mean, I've kind of just put one step at a time, but I pinch myself a lot. It's just really cool to be so involved in golf, and like the people I've gotten to know. And I think I've had really great role models. Amy Olson was from my area, and a lot of great college golfers. So I felt like I saw what they were doing, and I just wanted to like be at those levels. So it's pretty surreal. I mean, I'm still learning myself every day. I just, try to fake it till I make it sometimes, but I'm very lucky to be doing what I do.
All right, I'm going to ask you a question about the Epson Tour, and you've already given a compliment, so you can lean back on this if you'd like, but I want something you think the Epson Tour does very well and something you wish the Epson Tour would improve on, and I'm going to start on the improve on thing, because I mentioned earlier you finished 19th on the money list. It seems wild to me that they only give out 10 LPGA cards in terms of money lists, considering the Epson Tour is the tour a step below. I mean, I did Korn Ferry all year in terms of the broadcast, and they give out 30 cards. And if they gave out 30 cards on Epson, you would be headed to the LPGA Tour. So I wish, first of all, I think they should promote if you win three times, kind of like what they do with Korn Ferry and the PGA Tour. But I just wish there were more LPGA cards available for players, considering what the Epson Tour is and how it's a full season and how it's a grind and how you're traveling. I just feel like you should award the players that have had a good year, and you being one of those, 19th on the money list, I feel like should be good enough. So that's the thing I wish that they would maybe tweak and prove on. That might even be just an LPGA thing. That might not necessarily be Epson, but if you could lean on that and give us something you think Epson does great and something maybe you wish that they could change, tweak, or improve on.
Yeah, to start, like, what they do well, I think, is teaching us how to be a professional. I don't think, like, that's really talked about in sports. It's like, oh, you just have to have the talent, but, you know, like, understanding how to treat amateurs in a pro-am and teach a junior clinic and do pro-am parties and, you know, really be responsible. Like, I think it's a great place to start your career and really learn to be just, like, a really good person and a good adult. So, you know, to your point, that kind of goes into, I would have to agree. I think they could give out more conditional LPGA cards, okay. You know, even if they can't do full cards, I think to give out some conditional so that those girls can go from the Epson and then, you know, start to Monday qualify and have that opportunity to graduate. It just seems like there's, a stark difference between that top 10 and then you might, and there's girls, I mean, I know plenty of girls that have been, you know, top 20 on Epson many times. And it's so hard too, once you get out on the LPGA, I mean, you have to play well fast or you get, you know, reshuffled with Q Series status. So it's a grind. I mean, good golf solves everything, but I agree. I think it could be a little bit easier of a transition that is earned by playing well.
Yeah, I mean, you say good golf, you know, changes everything, but like, I would argue you've played really good golf this year, you know, and to now, I mean, you're the benefit from playing good golf is that you get to go to the end of Q Series and you don't have to go through first stage, second stage, things like that. But it, on the back end, say you don't have a great week or 2 weeks at Q Series, then in theory, there is, I could say, nothing to show for it. Now, you'll have plenty to show for it because obviously you gained a lot of, you know, experience and things like that from the season. But to your point, looking at 24, if you don't have a great Q Series, it's kind of back to that first step like you went through last year.
Correct. And there's not, you know, at stage two, I think it's cool what some of the Korn Ferry events are doing. I believe in their U school, if you get medalists, there's reward for that now.
Yep.
But, you know, I think those things are great because you get in certain one of these events and it doesn't matter if you're like third or 12th. So then,
right, totally.
You're playing on Sunday purely just trying not to screw up, which is not, it's such a weird way to play golf, horrible way to play golf.
That doesn't prep you much for the real life experience on the LPGA where you go, and let's have an 11 shot lead at a major. I'm going to be going into the final round aggressively. So yeah, I'm
absolutely
with you. Are you surprised at the depth of the Epson Tour? Like, you, 2 years in, are you surprised at the depth of talent and how many great players are out there and how good everybody is?
Oh, for sure. I'm pretty shocked. I mean, college golf's great. So, you know, that was a good prep, but we had a lot of cuts that were 3 under this year, which is pretty low for us. I mean, I think growing up, you used to be able to say, okay, like, you know, double the cut and add one. And that's just not relevant anymore. And you can see it too when girls, you know, we had one girl that was in a playoff for an Epson victory early in the season. She went to the Portland Classic and won the next week. You know, it's really close. And I don't think like our whole field could compete on the LPGA, but there's a ton of talent that, you know, they're going to graduate at some point and do really great things on the LPGA.
Kate, can you talk about the Augusta National Women's Amateur in 21? Because I believe you were first round leader. Is that right? It was a weird weather day, but I think you shoot 4 under to start?
Yeah. I swear I was one of the last invites in. So I was just hyped to be there, like, you know, giving it my all, but I was there for the tee gifts and for the experience. It was great. And I was 4 under through 12. And like Caddyshack, like the lightning came down and, you know, horrible weather. And I wasn't going to look at the leaderboard, and I think I was leading by three. And you could see the media people like, who is this girl? We've never heard of her.
Kate, I'm going to tell you this, and it's a respectful thing, but when a relative unknown does something at a big event and you're shuffling through the media guide, like, this is all they have on this person. You know, it's like, it's like year they were born, college they went to, one nugget about their golf game, and that's all you've kind of got. So I've been there before where you're going, I need a little more on this person.
Yeah, it was pretty hilarious. We were about to leave. My brother and I was caddying, and I don't know, I was kind of looking around like, okay, I'm leading. Like, this is weird. You just go back in your car, you go to the hotel, and, a guy in a suit comes out and is like, Miss Smith, can you come with us for a second? And we go to another room, and there's like 20 people with like 15 cameras. I was like, okay. And I mean, I was a mess. Like, I didn't bring my prescription sunglasses, so I had my glasses on, and I was like wearing old college clothes. But it was awesome. And then I woke up the next morning, played terrible. Was on the cut line, went to a playoff, missed the cut. It's golf, but it was awesome. And I joked to my brother, I said, well, I had to get on the playoff to get more TV time. Like, I was really getting the TV time that week. So it was pretty funny.
I want to ask you a couple logo questions. What's your favorite course logo, if you have one?
Yeah, I'd say the MacArthur logo.
Ooh.
Down in Florida.
The milk cart, the milk jug, so good. I mean,
yeah.
One of my favorites as well. I think we have these on our website, by the way, of what our favorite logos are. I think Marion is mine typically is my answer, but MacArthur's a sneaky good one. I will say, and I'm going to ask you a question about this as well, but where logo design has gone, and when you look at some of the classic logos that have done well over the last few decades, it is more of a if you know, you know thing than I can name that golf course, and so can the guy sitting next to me on the airplane. And I feel like MacArthur kind of encapsulates all of that, where the everyman golfer is probably not going to know what it is, but the golf nerd, historian, whatever, is going to be obsessed with it like we are. So I'm with you. I think it's so good. What makes a good logo in your opinion? When you're sitting down, like we're working on a logo right now for a course in Florida, and they kind of have given us the creative freedom to kind of run with it. What in your brain makes a good logo?
Yeah, I'd say there has to be an emotional connection between, either the membership or the people that play it all the time. Like, they have to see it and feel like, yes, like that's my golf course. So that's kind of an intangible. It makes our job really hard sometimes. So I'd say that's the first thing. Has to be used without words and with words, And then it's got to be, for us, it's like, it has to be embroidered on a white hat and look good.
Yes.
I think those are three kind of things we try to do.
What's a bad logo? Like, when you close your eyes and you think of a bad logo, what is that in your brain?
I'd say it's pretty intricate, and text heavy, very generic. I don't think old logos are necessarily bad, because like Interlochen in Minnesota is an old logo.
Yep.
And it has so much character to it. I just think, when you get these like filigree and fancy, it's like stuffy. Like, we don't really like stuffy logos.
Yeah. Try to avoid that. What was, have you had a pinch me moment with Grunt Under Repair? Have you had a moment where you got an email, or we started to work on a project and you kind of sat back and went, holy crap, I can't believe this is happening?
God, we've had a few. I think, our project with Titleist was crazy. Like, just seeing them launch that ball at the Tour Championship, we were all just freaking out, sending pictures to each other. I mean, we could not believe that, Titleist, we got to work so closely with them.
Yeah, radar capture technology, golf ball, I believe it what it is, and we did the design for it. Very cool to see. I remember having a conversation with our contact there, and I think the line was, if you guys do the design here, it's going to be on 5 million, things. And it was like, oh, okay, that's pretty serious. I mean, you know, like it is so wild. Like we've worked with, you know, David Ledbetter, we've worked with Ping, we've worked with Titleist. Like we've done a lot of these things already in a couple of years. And I've had my own pitch moments for sure where, you know, you're going back and forth. And I mean, some of my stuff is golf courses, like, you know, working with Sand Hills. I've never played it. It's my number one bucket list course that I've never played, but just doing, you know, a job with a course like that, you kind of floors you because you realize, like you said, I mean, history and, you know, everybody wanted to go play there and it being so unknown to so many people and getting an opportunity to kind of work with a club like that, it makes you feel like you're doing something right, you know?
Oh yeah. And like, we've done some things for Erin Hills and, but I think even like the Buddy's Trip logos, it's just crazy to make something that could potentially be around, you know, longer than we are, held in these traditions is really special.
Yeah, this podcast logo, by the way, if you're listening to this, is designed by Kate. If you listen to the Ping Proving Grounds podcast, also designed by Kate. So both of my podcast logos were Ground Under Repair designed. So when is Q Series? When are you, what are you like prepping? How many weeks do you have to prep? What's the prep like for you?
Yeah, it is like a couple days after Thanksgiving, I leave. I know it ends December 5th. It's a 6-round tournament, 4 rounds of cut and 2 rounds. So prep is, you know, I haven't taken too many days off, but I'm trying to kind of take more of a mental break, play a little bit more fun golf. And then really that like 2 to 3 weeks before, go into like a pretty normal prep that I've been doing more all season. But, big thing after season is just like getting back into the gym and, kind of physically getting back to normal. 'Cause it's amazing how, you know, just 5 weeks on the road, your body is so like unbalanced. And, you know, it's amazing how well players can play, you know, playing that many tournaments in a row. So,
yeah, I went to a nutritionist like a month and a half ago and just kind of going through what I was eating and diet. And do I like did that those tests where like you hold the stuff close to you and you see if like you're basically allergic to whatever you might be allergic to.
Oh, wow.
And he was like, all right, drink lemon water in the morning, then have celery juice after. And I went and saw him a couple weeks ago because we were just seeing how I was feeling and things like that. And he's like, how's it going? I was like, well, I was on the road 2 weeks in a row. And he goes, so not good. I was like, it's so hard to do this stuff when you're on the road. Like, unless you stay at a Residence Inn or something like that, it's like, if you don't have a kitchen, it's very, very hard to be strict about diet and working out and all those things, because it's just, you don't all have it at your disposal, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, our player dining's great some weeks, and then other weeks they're like, look, it's like a bunch of Hostess donuts and gum. Yep. And you're like, what is that supposed to do for us?
Can I swallow the gum? I've heard that wasn't good for you. Yeah. It was funny. Somebody was on social the other day. I think it was, maybe it was Michael Kim. And he said the Zozo Championship has the best player dining of any golf tournament he's ever played in. I worked the Zozo last year. Media dining was sparse, I'd say, is probably a good way to put it. And I was like, yeah, maybe it doesn't translate from player to media. So I understand what you mean. It is so funny going through it. You said, you know, you grew up and you didn't say you had a lot of friends in terms of golf. Do you have a group in Galveston that you can play with, that you can compete with, things like that?
Yeah. I mean, most of my friends here are over 65, my day-to-day golfing buddies, but the Texas girls have kind of adopted me as far as, you know, Kristen Gilman and Kenzie Wright, Lindsay McCurdy. They've been kind of my pals on tour, and so it's been fun. Kristen just graduated from Epson with her big finish. And so it's been great.
What she finished birdie eagle. What was it? What was the finish?
Birdie eagle. Yeah.
To like make it on the number, right? I mean, she had to finish birdie eagle.
Absolutely. And I mean, that's like the small snapshot, you know, looking out, like I think she shot -9 the last round, second to last tournament, and then -8 the last round. So it's awesome. I mean, it's just great to be around great golfers, and the girls on the Epson tour are awesome. I mean, if I'm back there next year, it is like, it's great. I love the people there. And so cool to share a lot of memories with them.
You were talking about turning professional and feeling like you had to be perfect. Did you realize over the last couple of years that you don't have to be perfect in golf to be competitive, to have a chance?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's cool getting better too. You know, I think now making a bogey, I feel like compared to college, like making a bogey, I have to hit two really bad shots to make a bogey. You know, if you hit a bad shot, you can get up and down, you can
for
chip
sure
in.
For sure.
Yeah, so it's cool to learn a little bit more about the game and about myself. And really, it's like being more, not perfect, but being consistent day to day is more important than like the minute you tee off. Like, you don't have to like death grip the club and hit every shot perfect. It's not really going to help you out much.
I mean, I noticed, I mean, you know, you're going back 15, you know, 16, 17 years ago, but when I was playing mini tour golf, when I kind of looked back on that experience, I would let those bogeys just linger. You know, you'd make a bogey on a hole where you hit it in the fairway, right? And then you hit a bad wedge. You don't get that up and down. You make bogey. And then all of a sudden you bogey, you know, the hole after that. And you go, no. Like, bogeys are totally fine. Somebody one time told me pars are great and bogeys are fine. And I think when I was younger, I didn't understand that at all. And now I totally get it. You know, I mean, there are times even when doubles okay, you know, it's like, I'm in serious trouble here. Just don't make an enormous number and you can get away with it. It is funny how the mentality of what's good and bad in golf can change over the years. It's almost like your game gets better, but also you allow yourself to let the mistakes be okay as well, right? So both of those things are rising at the same time.
Absolutely, because you know the birdies are going to come, which is, you know, once you can kind of learn that, I think you were helpful with that. And a few other people were like, Kate, you make a lot of birdies, like just make less bogeys. And I'm like, you know what, you're right. Like, I just have to, you know, cut a little bit of the mistakes out, but they're going to come, or just great shots are going to come. I mean, once you get to a certain level in golf, like you will hit a handful of great shots every round. And you don't know when they're going to come. So it's like fun to look forward to.
Yeah, I would, my buddy Ashton, who I played a lot of golf with, one time I said something about this. We were playing a two-man qualifier or something. I said something about it being a birdie hole. And he looked at me kind of annoyed and he goes, Shane, if you drive in the fairway, it's a birdie hole. Like, it doesn't matter how long the hole is. Like, you hit it plenty far. If you get the ball in the fairway, that is a birdie hole. So never say this is a birdie hole and this is not a birdie hole, because to your point, Kate, if you get the ball in a good position, any hole in theory could be a birdie hole.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the other day we were playing out here in Galveston Winds and I had to hit a driver off of a par three 15 feet. I was like, you know, this is one of the better chances I had all day. You know, you never
feels
know.
Like an eagle. We'll see what I do.
Yeah. It's a great game.
Oh, it's just maddening. It's crazy. With your parents and family being so close to golf, what are those text messages like after each round? I mean, is it immediate? Like, when you're done playing, do you have a dad text on the phone?
Oh, absolutely. No, mom is kind of the more nervous type. She likes texting her thoughts and kind of thinking them through. And then dad, it's always a phone call, you know, and they're always like fighting with the live scoring. They're like, was this right? Was that right? You know, and then they'll be like, what happened on this hole? You know, they want the play by play. So it's nice to have them so involved and just so pumped about, you know, some parents would be like, hey, we don't want you traveling through like the middle of nowhere, Oregon, like at dark, you know, trying to get to a golf tournament. So it's nice that they're supportive of kind of a crazy life choice.
Oh, Kate, my laptop and my phone, you're like a favorite on the app. And it's just every tournament I'm checking it. I get so excited. I try not to text you too much about it because it's like the middle of tournament rounds. But I remember earlier in the year, it's like you shot 65 in the first round. And I'm like texting Cindy. I was so fired up. Like, I've always told my friends, it feels like I have like almost like a little sister type of situation where I get to root you on and I get to see this progression, this quick progression, and how comfortable you feel like you are in golf and how good you've been. It's so fun getting to kind of work with you on the ground to repair stuff. But on the other end, it's so fun to get to watch you do what you do on the golf course. So that will continue, you know, for years to come. The app will have you as a favorite, no matter if it's Epson or LPGA. And yeah, I appreciate you coming on and chatting about it. I mean, I don't know if a lot of people understand the life of the Epson Tour, obviously the life of somebody that's an Epson Tour player, that's also, you know, running a business and involved so much into that. So I feel like, you know, you've kind of got a unique thing going, and it's a very cool and unique thing. And now, I mean, you can do wedding planning, I guess, for 2 weeks before you got to get back to golf, right? Is that kind of what you've scheduled in, what you penciled in for November?
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's a lot on my plate, but it's fun. Yeah, I've appreciated our friendship and you supporting, and it's been a wild ride. You know, I don't know what's next for GUR or where we'll be in 5 months or where I'll be playing, but you know, you could be the Mid-Am USGA
Oh,
champ
God.
next year. I mean,
I better
things
play
could
better.
happen.
I better play better than I did at Cherry Hills, that's for sure. Kate, where can people find you, follow you, all that stuff?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram and Twitter, pretty active. I think it's 99 Kate underscore Smith.
Is that when
And
you were born, by the way?
Yeah, just
Jeez.
went with that. Stuck with it.
99. That is, that's wild. 1999. I guess that makes sense if you add up to 24. Kate, thank you so much for your time. Good luck at the Q Series, and we'll chat soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, that'll do it for this week's Get a Grip podcast. A shout out to you for listening. If you're a fan of the podcast and you listen every week, tell your friends, tell your buddies, tell the people in your life to give it a chance, because we've had some unique and different guests on the pod over the last few months, and that is what I'm trying to do here. Hope you guys have a great Halloween. We'll be back next week with another podcast. Subscribe to the Fried Egg newsletter if you don't already. I've been writing a lot there, and will continue to do so. And I'm actually on the Fried Egg podcast this week with Kyle Porter and Andy Johnson talking about the 5 best years in golf. So go check that podcast out as well. Thanks to Kate. Thanks to you guys. We'll check back next week.